Coffee Club, Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 170. Finally, the boys are back. George, welcome back to Boulder. Welcome back to the studio. How's it feel?
Hey, thanks, Morg. I feel like I'm a guest on the pod.
It's been so long. 3 weeks.
Yeah, it felt longer than three weeks.
The boys are back.
Yeah.
No, it's been I called him once, but it was. I apologize for how difficult it was for all of us to line up.
Yeah. Wait, that was ages ago because that was the episode that then we then split into
then
two
it was,
episodes.
And then you couldn't. I heard you couldn't get Woody out of the studio. He just was taking up the whole afternoon.
He loved your spot, George. He loved your spot. He really.
No, he's really fucked with it. Yeah, is what he's done.
He's let into it. He did move it around. Different. I did notice that when he came in. So you might have to readjust a few.
The table's like now between me and Morg, like the couch is. The couch is on a whack angle since Woody's been here. It's really, really, really fucked with my spot. But in saying that, it feels good to be back. I apologize for my absences, and. Now just regularly scheduled programming from now on.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, where you were, beautiful part of the world, it's a good excuse to be away and enjoy and recoup. How was it?
It was much needed. Not even know. It was so nice. A lovely 5 weeks of New Zealand time.
5 weeks.
Family, weddings, Christmas, some beaches, lakes. Yeah, all the good stuff.
It looked amazing too. We saw some few photos and it looked pretty incredible. Did anybody comment on your accent? Have you still got the Kiwi accent? Sometimes I can't tell, you know, when you go home and you've been in America for quite a while, your family members usually can pick it up. Have they noticed your change in your accent or is it?
Most people were quite complimentary.
Oh, that's good.
Of it being still fairly Kiwi.
That's impressive. How different did you sound there to how you sound right now?
Well, that's a good question because you definitely start picking it up when you're there.
Within the first day, the first hour, I think you like switch
it,
back.
It definitely changes up a little bit. So,
yeah. Do you reckon our other teammate, New Zealander Maya, do you reckon she
picks up a Kiwi accent when she goes back? I imagine Maya with like a classic
super
New Zealand
strong,
accent.
Super strong. Like only when she's in New Zealand, then when she comes back here, it goes American.
New Zealand.
Her siblings probably.
Yeah, surely.
Because they were more like in school there, I think.
Yeah, and like they're at uni down there.
So they would.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to follow her down there one day.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
No, well, it was a great time.
Before we get into it, we'll go straight back to you in a sec, George, but I don't want to forget about this lovely bean shout out. These are for you boys, and they're from our manager, Tom Wang.
They are?
Yeah. So he reached
via Houston.
Yes. So before going to Houston, he did a two and a half week maybe.
Humidity training camp,
training
right?
Training camp in Hawaii, a famous place for training camps. And he picked up some coffee for us. So
he heard us talking about like going to Hawaii before.
He just wanted to scope it out.
Before Tokyo Worlds.
Make sure it was good.
So we had him just do a little trial run.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, we'll
thanks,
over.
Tom.
We'll have a look.
Any others from Houston?
Actually, that was it. That's the last. That was it. That was all that I received. It was just from Tom.
All we could do in Houston was from our already manager.
Yeah, but
come on, Houston.
No,
Coffee Club
I think
fans.
It's kind of a what different. It's a less spectator event because there actually was a lot of Coffee Club people,
yeah.
And maybe they had bags. But the problem was that was at like mile six, and then I still had like half the race to go, so they couldn't.
You easily could have
tucked
them like in your jersey or something.
I would have loved a photo finish of Morgan just carrying three more bags of coffee beans
he's
through the line.
On the video stream, there's a guy chucking it at Morgan.
Morgan's
like,
just catching it
mid race.
That'd be kind of epic.
All right, fair enough. But yeah. Does it start and stop and finish in the same place?
It does. Like you could, well. You could,
but I guess if you're watching it out
like
on the
impossible.
Course,
yeah, because the finish line you can't even really. It's not very spectator friendly. The actual finish line itself, like it's kind of well, there can be, but it just wouldn't make sense. Like you wouldn't go there. You would just. It'd be a much more fun spectator experience to be somewhere out in the course, like if you're from Houston, just because then you can just yell at the people running past, and it's way more chill. But the actual, like, yeah, right where you finish is kind of like a shit show. Like, because there's just so many people there and so much shit happening. And, yeah. But and also the elites, this is the craziest thing ever. I'll get into the full, we're going to do the long version of the Houston recap. But this is the only time I've ever had a race where you finish here, this finish line, 5 meters away is your hotel. Like, it's the best setup thing ever.
That does sound nice.
And like the elites get, you just like walk straight back to your hotel. So yeah, you get done with the race at 7:45 and then you're in your hotel room by 7:50. If you don't warm down, which I did not, and then up in the hot tub before 8 a.m.
You didn't
in the morning.
Warm down. You just went, I'm going for a swim.
I just went straight to the hot tub.
Yeah.
I do kind of hate the travel from the hotel to the race.
For
like
tracks,
that like bus ride.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes it's kind of a vibe, but normally I don't like that. But
the only one I've liked is
that's like the nerve wracking bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the tension section.
So everyone's like quiet and got headphones on and shit.
The two times where it's been really nice is London, because like you literally have that. It's like a decent walk, but it's like not a bad walk from where the West Ham Stadium is to the hotel. And then the Zurich one, when it's usually at the Crown Plaza, it's literally across the road.
How about
those are the only two times.
UCLA?
UCLA was good. Yeah, that was good.
Nice. That campus hotel?
That was clutch.
I had my drug tester come with me to the hotel to do my post-workout and then go back to the meet to get my drug test.
That's the only one I can think of.
The other vibe, which this is like a complete opposite vibe in terms of it's just an absolute chaos shit show. But New York can be cool, I reckon, if you get like the subway and stuff. Yeah, after the race.
It's good footage. Yeah. Like getting the sub.
It is kind
of having to like trudge through the New York streets in the snow.
Yeah.
Ollie ate shit. We were walking to the subway. Also forgot his spikes.
Yeah. So before the race.
Before the didn't you you tried to run back
and I fell over
to get to the hotel to get your spikes and ate shit.
I think I won that race, didn't I?
I think
that was the year you won. Yeah. it's because you were so stressed out by the time you got there that you were just primed.
I was primed and ready to go. Yeah. So that was funny. But that sounds pretty nice for Houston. So like the Elite Field, that was their hotel where they were staying and you just walked straight. Did you have to like, when you were back there, was there a lot of Coffee Club fans in that area? I guess it's probably not a great area to view the race. So you probably didn't see
like
that.
In the hotel?
Well, like from the hotel to where the finish line is really.
Not really, because it's a different type of event. You know, there's 20,000 people racing and most of them are just like, wouldn't even think to listen to the Coffee Club podcast, you know?
Which they should.
They should.
We got to change that. Yeah. In 2025, that's our mission.
No, but along the way, along the course, I did get a lot of like, let's go Morgan, let's go Coffee Club.
Yeah, nice.
But also I was running next to Morgan Pearson also most of the race, so I could never tell.
Which Morgan?
I'm going to claim that one. Like, that's probably for me, but who knows? It could be for him. He's an American. He's got a lot of fans.
He's probably
out
thinking the same thing. He's like, that's probably for Morgan McDonald, but I'm going to claim it as well and use it for motivation.
So, yeah, it was a good vibe out there, though. But yeah, these road racing scenes, it's mental. Absolutely mental. But before we get into it, let's do a little, how long has it been since our last Gooch watch? I think we wanted to do one recently, but... I think it's been months.
Honestly, I think this is like Gooch Watch season two. We left everyone on a cliffhanger back in like November.
Everybody wants to know what's going on with George's Gooch.
And I don't know. I think we started having just a multitude of guests. The marathon started happening. People started racing. And Gooch Watch just really went on break for a bit.
I went to New Zealand.
And then it went to New Zealand as part of the Gooch healing process. Yeah. And then now we can start season two of Gooch Watch.
We should call it the Gooch Getaway. It was the Gooch Getaway to New Zealand.
The Gooch Getaway?
Yeah.
Okay. Should I do a combination of Gooch Watch and New Zealand recap?
I think that would be amazing.
Give it to us.
What do we want first?
I kind of want... I want the Gooch first, and then I want the...
I'd like them together.
Oh, yeah. Morgan wants some, like, literally...
You want me to weave them together?
Do the storytelling. I mean,
chronologically.
The Gooch went to New Zealand. Yeah, let's just go chronological.
Okay. All right. Back at the cliffhanger of the season one Gooch Watch, which ended in... I actually don't know. November, maybe. Or was it... Did we not even get... Were we just still, like...
I think it would have made it to November.
Did we ever cover the shockwave? I don't think we did. The Gooch, the shockwave?
We definitely covered the PRP.
Definitely. That was season one. All right. We're going way back. Basically, I started, I gave running a few goes in early October, like around the summit. We're really going back now. And just like testing it off the Alter G, got up to 20 or 30 minutes on the ground. And this, so that's like September, October. No, that's like 2 months. 2 months post Olympics. And kind of lasted a week maybe of like a couple of attempts of that. And the gooch just was not ready. Just still really painful in the upper hamstring adductor area, which I've just been calling my hamstring because that's like the easiest way to describe it, but it's like not actually my hamstring, but it's kind of up in my sit bone, if anyone can picture that, which is
I'm picturing it. It's lovely.
Just so everyone has an idea of where the pain is, and it just wasn't ready, which was fucking annoying. And so I ended up taking a little bit more time off end of October. I did get another MRI just to see how things were looking, to see if anything, like if it had actually turned into like a kind of tendon, like a hamstring, high hamstring tendinopathy type thing that I've never had. But like, I know people with high hamstring stuff, that sounds no fun. But tendon was all good. And like the MRI just, it honestly didn't show that much. It was just like slightly better than Paris, but after 2 months of any bone injury, like that stuff's still going to be on there. If anyone has also been in that situation, like nothing is going to be completely healed anyway. So that was just throwing $450 down the drain, really. but the result of that was that we were like, all right, we need to do something to initiate some healing just get the ball rolling, like really something else. So Shockwave was the next logical step / idea that I think Kobayas was suggesting that. Mm-hmm. And had been successful in the past with like Helen, for example, like pre-Olympics, that was her, like she did a big Shockwave round in Boston.
Is this Shockwave on the bone?
Essentially.
Yeah, that sounds crazy to me.
Yeah, it's kind of brutal.
What'd it feel like?
I'll get to that. Okay. But I think like Helen flew all the way out to Boston to do that just because we didn't, that's like, that dude's an expert out there. And I think that went really good based on the fact that she won a medal at the Olympics. There we found a guy in Boulder, or Kobayas knew of him or something, with a bunch of the expensive machines. And so I went around there and started a Shockwave round like twice a week for 3 or 4 weeks. I was going in there and getting like, I didn't even know this was a thing, but the Shockwave everyone pictures is like the machine gun one. Like I assume that's the one like you're imagining when you say that sounds real bad. Mm-hmm. And that's called like radial Shockwave, which is just like tick, 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 like a million times. And that apparently that's like the early Shockwave version and like the cheapest, easiest one to do. But I was getting like, the first one I'd get is called like EMTT, electromagnetic something, something, something. And that one, like I'd just lie on my front and I'd just point it at my gooch. And that one, I just sit there 15 minutes and I can't even feel it. Oh. It's just like a disc sending like electromagnetic, what the fuck's, I don't know. To like stimulate some healing. And then I would get the radial one, like kind of in more the muscle belly and like the tissue going up to my sit bone. So like the machine gun one, I'd get that for a few minutes and then I'd finish. this is intense sessions. I'd finish with the focused Shockwave, it's called, which is like sound waves instead of, I don't know, I guess literally shockwaves, like physical ones. I don't know all the terminology, but this, I think they're like crazy sound waves, and that one's like silent, but that one they also just point like right on my sit bone basically, and that one hurts like a motherfucker. that one's like, they're like, to describe it to you, like, it's going to feel like when you're getting like your tooth drilled. Like, if you've ever got that to like put a filling in, where it's like that like weird aching sensation that like kind of like burning, and like so it felt like my tooth was getting drilled, but in my gooch.
So you're getting a tooth drilled in the gooch.
Amazing.
Like, nice. That one is, it was so painful, but I'd walk out of there feeling so good after that one. Like, nice. I don't know, maybe partly like the pain.
Everything was
like,
numb.
Yeah, like, it was so painful that after that. It was, everything just would feel a lot better.
Yeah.
But got there for 3 weeks, twice a week, and like, I reckon that got me to the point where I could run after that. Like, that was when I started coming to practice a bit, like jogging with the team. Did my first couple of workouts with Sage at the start of December, probably. And I definitely credit like the shockwave sessions for getting me started. Like, I don't know, that just seemed to be a big turning point.
So you can do that for any bone injury now?
Pretty much, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it stimulates like a bunch of cell regeneration and like, I don't know, it does good stuff.
Wow.
Just not that comfortable sometimes.
Real fucking painful and pretty damn expensive.
Yeah. How much is it? Can we ask? Or is it just like just expensive as hell?
No, it was like a couple $100 a session by the end, times 6 or 8 or something.
Yeah, so for that,
maybe like $1,500.
You'd have to be
I feel
predetermined to,
very fortunate that that on
covered that,
pays for the recovery process as well. Like,
yeah,
that is such a huge asset that we have as on athletes, and so very thankful for that tough position. Like, I feel for people that are going in.
Yeah,
for
it's I mean,
because I don't know if health insurance covers it, actually. Like, PRP, they don't cover, right? Because it's not, like,
I think our health insurance is catastrophic, unless we're about to die.
Yeah, mine doesn't cover nothing.
Mine only covers, if I'm bleeding out, then I might be able to get in. But if I'm, like, just kind of a severed limb, but I'm not going to die, I think they'd be like, oh, just put some ice on it and I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah. So, before I went to New Zealand, you know, I was running a few times a week. I'd actually done a workout or two with Mario before I left. So, like, progress was being made. I got up to 40 miles a week probably for like 2 or 3 weeks. And that's now like 4 months post Olympics. So like, started December. So it's already taken a while. But I was running, and that was nice to be back going to practice a couple times. And then I fucked off to New Zealand and, for 5 weeks, which was partly like, I went for a long time because my sister ended up getting married. Not ended up.
Yeah. It was like, I went there, I wasn't sure.
It was a 50-50.
It did happen.
It happened. I can't confirm.
She was always getting married.
Potentially.
In mid-January. And so I was going to go over Christmas and stay till like the 18th or 19th, whatever date she got married on, 17th or something.
Whatever date she got married
on. And so that was like, that was the reason I was going 5 weeks. And obviously I'm not running indoors based on the lack of running. So I had a bit more freedom to go to New Zealand for a while and heal the gooch up.
So the gooch enjoy New Zealand?
Yeah, that's episode one. Well, the gooch did enjoy New Zealand, actually. But right before I left, I got another injury. So that was a bit of a bummer, which I guess people...
Always got to keep you on your toes, eh?
Yeah, just a little
curveball.
I mean, shit. Anyone who has been on the injury cycle knows like the hardest part is getting out of it. And it's like once you're healthy, you're good. It's the coming back process that is just like so unlikely to be perfect. And so when I hopped on the pod for that day, like I'd just run like that 5 mile run or whatever I had after a couple of weeks off again. So that was a bummer, but it meant lovely Christmas on the farm with the family, and over New Year's, or like just for New Year's, I didn't really have to run and
chilling.
Yeah, so I was playing a bunch of tennis still. I could kind of move around the tennis court a bit, which I felt like was probably a good thing to like keep things loaded slightly. And I was lifting. But an unplanned extra 10 days, 2 weeks off. I actually don't know how long it ended up being. Eventually, I just started running again. Just kind of like a, I don't know, some kind of hip issue. I guess we'll never know what it was. I never really got it checked out, but it came right. And then started running again early January and made decent progress in those next few weeks. Like kind of got back to where I was like quicker than the first time, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like a couple of introductory workouts to see how things are going. And yeah, was able to take a little trip around the North Island early January up to the beach, which was where I was going. The beach had really shit weather up in Gisborne. And so we ended up bailing and I ended up at Sam Tanner's.
Shout out Sam.
For a few days.
Oh, yeah.
At the Mount, which is a pretty epic part of New Zealand. Not quite as good as where I'm from.
Of course not.
Of course not.
He's from the Bay of Plenty and I'm from Hawke's Bay. And they're like the only two regions in New Zealand that are like named after the bay. So it's always like a battle of like
battle of the bays.
And like which one is called, like if you people just say like going to the bay. So like which one has like superiority of like
me and Morgan have that.
Needing to be called like the name of it. Yeah. Or can you just refer to it as the bay?
So who did, like, has anybody won this battle or is it still contentious? Like
it probably depends who you ask.
I guess if I ask Sam.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then if I ask you, you get the other answer.
Which one is better though? Honestly, be objective here.
Which one's bigger?
If I'm going to visit one, which one am I going to visit?
You're going to visit mine, obviously, to see me.
Sam Tanner invited him already. You got in there.
But where Sam lives has a pretty epic beach. Maybe the surfing is better where Sam is.
Yeah, but so I want to see Simon. I want to see Simon. So
if you want to see the sheep, and
you're just going to have to go to both.
I heard these sheep are pretty good looking sheep, so I would love to see them. Also, the farm looked beautiful, so I'd love to hang out there. But
that's in our bay.
So hanging out with Sam, seeing his lifestyle, were you a bit jealous of that? I can imagine it's pretty cool seeing his setup.
Everyone needs to like live a few days in Sam Tanner's shoes, just to experience. That his lifestyle that he's built for himself.
It's pretty amazing. Crazy.
You would not believe what he's able to get done during a day.
He's got so much energy.
Yeah.
The man is literally bouncing off the walls all day long with like no caffeine. And I think he literally can't sit still. And so he requires many toys and many activities throughout the day.
How does his wife do it?
She's also buzzing.
Oh, so she's a lunatic as well.
She's same a teacher. Page. And so she was off school because summer holidays when we were there. So
right.
That was really fun hanging out with those guys. And, you know, we went motorbiking, normal biking, hiking, swimming in the ocean. Then we went wakeboarding on the lake, jet skiing. But it's just like a bunch of shit. And he has
all these toys.
And then we were going to go fishing. We were like about to go out for a fish. And then the wind came up a little bit. So we bailed to the lake instead and went like wakeboarding instead. And this is just his life every single day.
And this is all like in his backyard, essentially.
Dude, pretty much.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And he has like these ridiculous, like he does have a car now, but only in like the last year. And he used to just ride, giant road bike with like a 1,000 cc to practice.
Wow.
Which apparently is similar to Jakob. Apparently he's got like a similar bike.
Jakob does.
Which is what we're posting about.
I don't know if he drives it to practice though.
I think he's just also into bikes.
Yeah. He's into motorsport stuff.
And yeah, they call it Tannerland.
That's unreal.
It's like a few days that's where his mum and dad live. They live like just down the road and they call it Tannerland. And
so he has his own house with all this stuff.
He has his own house.
Because his parents also, like, their house is similar.
They have the skate pole, the skate park, and the trampoline park in their backyard.
This is crazy.
With the jet boat. They've got all these e-bikes. And then they have these, like, two electric motorbikes that I took for a spin.
All right,
and these things are ridiculous. You, like, you have to like be quite they're like silent, which is so sick.
That's and then actually sick.
You got to be like pretty gentle on the throttle, or you are literally flying off the back. Like they go like almost like 100 k's now.
Damn,
and they're like electric motorbikes.
Well, I know where training camp's going to be next year. Not Scottsdale.
It actually is very good running. He lives like right on this gravel path. He hosts this pub run. I don't know if you guys have been. He's posted on his Instagram a bunch.
Didn't see that.
We should do. He's like just hosts a group run once a week from this pub, and then they get free beers afterwards. So I went to that and biked along because I'd run in the morning and I wasn't.
How far was it from your place to his place?
It's like 4 hours.
Okay,
so
that's pretty far. Yeah,
a decent stint. But I was already like. Because I'd gone to that beach place, it was only like 2 hours back up to Tanner's. Yeah. So that was how I ended up there. And
did you stay there for a few days?
Yeah, spent 3 nights with those guys.
So you stayed at his place?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, yeah. That would have been sick.
That was a lot of fun. What's funny is I don't know if you guys had also seen this, but Neil Gawley stayed at Tanner's.
Oh, really?
After that, after the spectacle, which Neil won. Shout out. Apparently made $10,000.
He did. It was a high payday.
New Zealand. But still.
Yeah, that's what, about $4,000?
Yeah, yeah. Like,
sorry.
Like five and a half or something at the moment. all right.
Still $10,000. Somewhere.
Apparently that was,
somewhere.
Apparently the spectacle was amazing.
That's everyone, cool. That's really cool.
And
it looked like they got a good crowd there.
Yeah, apparently it was epic success. So that's sweet. And Neil went up to Tanner's on the way out, I think. And Sam just said by like the end of the time staying there, Neil was destroyed. Like he was so tired.
He's like, I gotta go home.
Yeah, I could imagine his energy and Sam's energy just colliding. Like Neil would last the day and be like, I need to sleep for the rest of the day.
So if anyone has the opportunity to go stay with Sam, I highly recommend it.
Is he just it's just available if you're coming past.
Apparently.
Well, he's got by Tanaland.
Yeah. Go to Tanaland, spend a few days there, it'll blow your mind that he's also a world-class 1500 meter runner.
Yeah, I love that.
So that was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
And I had someone to run with for a few days, which was always nice because otherwise it was solo for those few weeks, which is, I mean, it's hard to train at home. Like I know you guys have like found this as well. Like when you go back, like you're out of routine a little bit, like running just seems like it's suddenly like not the top priority.
There's just a
when
bunch
you're with
of,
your family. There's just a
the
bunch
barriers,
of other shit going
the barriers
on.
Get put in front of it, whereas here all the barriers are taken away.
Mm. Yeah, and which is like, it's okay in this situation because I'm like, if I was trying to come back and race in a couple of weeks, like that would be really hard. Mm. Which I did try and do a couple of years ago,
and it was tough to do.
And so this year that was also like gave me that opportunity to stay for a bit longer. You know, see some people, spend a bit more time with family, et cetera, et cetera. And then I had a nice week back at home. The weather came right. Maya was saying that when she was in New Zealand over New Year's, the weather was very shit.
It was rainy.
Yeah. For like 10 days, it was not good. And then she left, and then it got really nice again.
Maybe she was bringing the bad weather in.
Yeah, seriously. And so had a nice final week at home, getting ready for my sister's wedding, which was very nice experience. And I actually got some running done. I think I probably ran like 60 miles.
Nice.
The last week I was at home.
That's really good.
Which is, you know, still not obviously full training, but getting closer and closer. And
is it easier to cross train at home?
It is at the gym.
Like where we spoke to you.
Where I was. Like that's real sweet. Has super nice cross training things. I did a couple bike rides from home, but also just like in the afternoons, like if I've already gone running, like there's just other shit going on. It's so hard.
There's
to
like
just,
always something you can be doing.
Yeah, especially like a couple of days before the wedding, and there's like actually a ton of
people.
There's
around.
So like cousins, like friends, family, bunch of socializing to do. An actual wedding to go to the day after. Yeah.
So that's recently.
So that's combination of Gooch Watch and New Zealand.
Recently, good times.
Yeah, sounds like everything is pointing in the right direction.
Yeah.
And then I was straight back into it this morning on the track. Body had a bit of a shock.
That's the way to do it.
That's the way it happens in
Boulder, bro. I think you're going to feel like pretty bad, pretty weird anyway. You may as well just fucking hit some mile reps with Mario. Let's
do a workout.
Let's get it done.
And so I feel pretty good about where the Gooch is at. I think like, I think the Gooch is pretty much in the clear, and it's more just like keeping everything else moving well.
Yeah, just progress back to full like, training.
Yeah, that progression is gonna feel pretty bad still. Like going from like 60 back to full training, my legs are gonna hurt. It's gonna be real tiring. It's gonna take a long time to get fit. I'm obviously very out of shape. It's been like 6 months since the Olympics, maybe. You know, I'm just getting to like half of the normal training load. But I feel good about when I have been like able, like I think the stuff in the gym feels better than I ever have. Like I've been able to lift basically 3 times a week since like October. Like I feel strong in that area. And we'll see. Maybe, who knows, like 6 months off, maybe that's just like a big freshen up the body needed. That's how, there aren't many other ways to look at it other than that, you know, I feel like there are good times ahead and nice to be back with the team now and hopefully get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll be so nice. And I think the time off is always hard because always would all like to be training well all the time. But yeah, you definitely get a good opportunity to work on other things and to experience other things, which, yeah, once you come back to running, I think that's just positive. Because, yeah, when you run too much, you get too good at just running and you forget about all the other stuff as well.
Yeah.
So it's always good to take that time off and take some positives from it. I don't know. You see it happen all the time. We'll come back stronger than before. So
yeah, 100%.
Without a doubt.
100%.
Yeah.
So good to have you back. And, yeah, now hopefully we just keep rolling.
Keep it rolling. That's 2 weddings in your backyard, right, George?
No. My brother's was in her backyard.
Oh, it was
my sister's
in yours.
Was in our backyard.
Okay, because I thought it, because I knew it was in a backyard. I didn't, I thought it might have been your parents.
Getting married at home is sweet.
Yeah.
Because in like,
who's left to get married now?
Out of my siblings?
Yeah.
Two out of four.
Yeah, two out of four. So do you reckon those other two potentially, no pressure, but the garden must be like a set piece now. You're thinking, this is probably the spot.
Now it's being done though. I don't know if like
maybe do it at Sandgate.
Make it a tradition.
I don't know if you can do it at Tannerland.
I don't know if you can recreate it.
You could definitely do it at Tannerland.
In the skateboard maybe?
Yeah, just everyone running around on e-bikes and stuff. I feel like the wedding at home thing, I don't know, I kind of love it.
It was very nice like at the end of the night, just being able to walk back down the hall to bed.
I mean, it just sounds like, and if you have the space for it, it sounds like an amazing thing. Who officiated? Yeah. Do you have like somebody come in or did Simon put his hand up?
One of my sister's close friends.
Nice.
To the wedding.
Nice.
That's real good. Super cool. Some funny MCs. Some very funny
speeches. You said the best man speech was iconic.
Best man speech was great.
Yeah.
Great band.
Yeah.
Just live band. Yeah.
No jock hitting the sticks.
Jockey was on the dance floor.
Oh, was he?
Bank was on the dance
floor. He's very good at doing that.
Coming back to Denver next month in February while we're at training camp.
Oh,
I had to break it to him. He was asking if we were going to be there and I had to give the bad news that we're going to be in Phoenix.
Was his dance on the dance floor the same as his dance as Bank?
Pretty recognizable, yeah.
Dude, his dance in the song Grin, though, for the music video is actually pretty sick.
Mm.
It was very tailored. It was very much like
gives me those
routine.
Like Daniel Craig vibes.
I kind of love it, though.
The dance is like walking along as well.
I kind of love it. I love that Daniel Craig thing. It's iconic.
Yeah.
So, well, good to hear that everyone had a good time. Me and Morgan missed you, so it's good to have you back, man.
Good to be back here.
Nice to be back.
Mm-hmm. Ollie, do you want to do a little check-in? I feel like we'll do more with you next week as well. But
I mean, I haven't got much going on, bruv.
give it to us.
Let me give it to you. Let me give it to you. My mum was in town. It was a great time. Shout out, mum. We had a lovely time. She unfortunately didn't get to see any snow until like near the end of the trip, but she was very excited that it snowed here. And she saw a lot of squirrels and spent a lot of time with Gus, which was a great time. My training is going really well. We had a funny incident at the track. Me, Robert Farkin, and Yared Nagus, as well as Mario, who was in that same lane. We were doing a session that felt extremely hard and difficult. And we found out at the end of the session that it was 13 meters long per rep.
This happens every year somehow.
Well, it happened, I think, in the exact same spot.
Exact same spot. They didn't even change it. So it was maybe a second high, or like also almost 2 seconds.
13 meters is probably like 1.5 to 2.
Yeah, 1.5 to 2 seconds for 400 meter rep that we were running pretty quickly. Yeah. So
the session was already hard enough.
Yeah, it was already hard enough. And then it just felt extremely difficult. And then even Yara was looking at me like, what the hell's going on here? And
wait,
Mario
was your 200 split correct?
So this is the thing. So Robert was talking to me after, he's like, wow, the 200s just felt so easy. I was like, that's because we were running 200 meters. Where the 400s we were doing, we were running 413 meters and we're running them around 56.
What about at the split, he means though?
Yeah.
Like halfway through the 400.
Was someone giving you your 200
yes,
split?
So Kelsey kept giving him, no.
Okay.
So she would say 31 for Yard. So then Yara would be like, what the hell, pick it up. And then we'd run like 55, 56. So we're like, okay, we're supposed to be 57, but it's fine. Anyway.
So every rep, you just be like trying to get out really hard, and then you get a split that was too slow.
Yeah.
And
so
then,
Robert
and then
went
like,
out.
I'm just going to go
even harder.
Robert went out really hard for his split where he ran like 55. And he went out and Kelsey was like 29. I was like, no way, this is 29. But we just did the session, you know, we just got to get it done.
Wait,
it was
did
a long
you do
session.
The- Did you do the whole thing, or did you do like half of it with long
whole
400?
Thing.
Every single rep.
So the session was 8 sets of 400, 200. We did the whole thing, 413 meters. So instead of Dathan and Kelsey being like, oh, sorry about that, they were like, you're incredible, this is amazing. So they got super hyped about it, which is also cool. Like, that's obviously, funny. If you've done well and you're running really well, then that's great. But like, we were like, damn, we ran an extra 13 meters. That should take it off our mileage, bro. That's crazy. But that was a funny incident that we had with practice, but training's gone really well.
I do think, all right, maybe it's also the personnel in that workout, but come on. Surely know at what a 400
so Kelsey,
feels like.
So this is the thing.
You gotta know.
We ran the first one in 60 and it felt hard, but running in 99s. And Kelsey was like, this is the line for the 400 meter mark. And then we were supposed to run 60 and we did run 60. So we thought, okay, this is 60. So Kelsey's like, oh yeah, you're good. But we ran 58. So yeah. We were just feeling good, but we thought that, oh, the 60 felt
well,
like...
Well, maybe you can... Hard. It's also like, maybe one of the... I mean, it's January, running a hard 400. Maybe you're like, oh, fuck, maybe that is a 60. So maybe that does make sense.
That's probably
like,
what it was, but we were running 58, and then we ran 2 seconds quicker for each one. But it was pretty funny, because Robert was like, oh my goodness, this would not fly at UFC Europe. Oh my goodness, no, this would not work. It was very funny to see him... see us laugh about it, but yeah, so that happened. Training's going pretty well. Gussie's doing pretty well too. I'm looking at starting a Lego, a new Lego piece. I did the Barad-dûr of Lord of the Rings Lego set, which was 5,643 pieces. This one that's coming up is $1,000, and it hasn't been. It hasn't been released in a very long time. It is the Star Wars Death Star.
Wow.
I was thinking potentially if you boys wanted to build it.
Big are we talking?
It's probably as big as like one of the Swiss balls in the gym.
What?
Yeah, it's massive. And it's got layers to it and everything.
Should we just hang it in the studio right here?
I was thinking we could just build it like somewhere around here. We just see the progress. But it is pretty massive.
We just live
I will need help
it.
With it. I
you
know
gotta
that.
Send us a picture. I want to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
Do we need to start a give a little for you? Like a GoFundMe?
I think I can afford it, but
he's going to go broke.
I think Lego is bankrupting you.
Lego is bankrupting. Well, yeah, that Barad-dûr set did cost me a lot. But to be fair, Jackson also bit Rivendell, and the Rivendell set was pretty sweet that he built up. But I'm kind of getting into that because I feel like it's been pretty fun. Other than that, just been vibing. Things have been good.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. I've enjoyed... Just to veer off to Morgan, I've enjoyed the Morgan and Cinta Adventures on YouTube. You guys should check it out. My dad, shout out to my dad. He at work watches it because there's literally nothing else going on. So he enjoys to get the updates from that. Nice. Yeah, that's pretty much it from my family.
Wasn't Gus's birthday right before Christmas?
It was. Gus
fourth?
Had a yes. He
fourth
had
birthday?
A fourth birthday.
Getting old.
What'd you do
he's
for
old.
Middle-aged.
I got him some like some meat. Cooked him up some meat.
A nice steak.
Nice steaky. It was like a cut, like a boyhouse cut.
Boy, sheesh.
Yeah. So I got him some of that.
That's a good birthday.
Took him for a couple of long walks. Got him a chicken. Shout out for Chicken Boy Morgs. I got him a little chicken. He ate the foot of the chicken and then threw it up the next day. Fantastic work.
You would love that.
Yeah. So
one of his favorite pastimes.
One of his favorite pastimes is eating Morgan's stuff and throwing it up. So trust me, Morgan, he still believes and lives in you. After eating Morgan's phone and countless other things of Geordie's, he's still eating up shit and throwing it up. But his birthday was recent. And yeah, that's pretty much what we're going full circle
by the time we get back to Phoenix.
I mean, in a couple of weeks. I was telling Gus the other day, we're going to have flashbacks. Yeah, I was telling Gus the other day, we're going back to his hometown. Maybe I'll come back with another bulldog. Who knows? I was telling Jason, because Jason, our treatment guy Jason, regrets not getting that bulldog that when I got Gus Juicy, the female chocolate one. He's like, I regret that, dude. I should have got that because it's a beautiful bulldog. Yeah. He was like, he loves those type of dogs. He has a Frenchie himself called Benny. And, We always bond over that. He really regrets not getting Juicy, but who knows? Maybe he'll be down in Scottsdale, and we'll run past the family and see if they have some little puppies there. Convince somebody to buy one. But no, things are going well here.
You get back into racing next week.
Yes, so I race New Balance. I'm racing the 1500 mile, whatever that one is. I know Tesla's racing it, Hobbs Tesla, and
defending champ,
and then I think White Castle is also racing it. Yep. I'm pretty sure. So those two blokes are unreal, and they're going to be running pretty quick. So hopefully, we can run nice and quick with them. And then I'm going to stay with the ladies. I think Cinta, Maya, Sage, and Robert potentially are going to be staying between Boston and New York. So I'm going to do that for Milrose, which will be exciting.
Don't give away too much. We'll do full previews.
No, I'm not going to give away too much. And that's pretty much it. Oh, and I really want to ask if you fellas are interested in doing another potential food challenge. we can talk about this. We can talk about this on another podcast. But
wait, like 2025 food challenge, like your vegan one.
No, the vegan, remember when we went and got the cheeseburger? Yeah. I said it was a great cheeseburger. Yeah. There is a place that I want to go that I think has some of the best Japanese food I've had. And
we'll actually make a video out of it this time.
Yeah. And you guys can roast me about how shit it is. So
is it in Boulder?
It's in Denver.
In Denver?
Yeah.
All right, we'll make a trip out of it.
Yeah. If you guys are interested, potential trip foodie.
I do that. That sounds fun.
I was reminiscing the other day because I think Dylan was talking about burgers or something in the long run, and I told him the story about us going to Black Burger.
It's a good time.
But yeah, things are good. So
awesome, man. Awesome. Well, yeah, I guess we'll come all the way back around to Houston now.
Yeah.
Please ask any questions at any point, but I'll give you kind of the rundown of the few days in Houston, the experience. So Joe and I went in on a Thursday. Race wasn't until Sunday morning. But Joe had his press conference on Friday, so he had to get there on Thursday. So I was like, yeah, we'll go in together. I was happy to go there a few days early, all that, just get used to the roads out there, get used to the vibes. And I as soon as I was there and we went for the first round, I was like, it makes a lot of sense why people come to Houston. It's the most chill thing ever. It's so relaxed. You're in this hotel, which has like everything, like that's like HQ for all the elite athlete things to do with the race, and they look after you so well. And yeah, as I said, the finish line is right there. The start line is a 10-minute drive away. It's like the start line is really close. It just takes a while to drive there on the bus on race morning because like the roads are closed and all that stuff. But yeah, from a logistical standpoint, so smooth. And also the roads themselves, like the course. We did the day before the race, we drove the entire course. Which I was like, I didn't know. I didn't really care about doing that. I was like, I don't know if this is necessary, but I mean, all right, let's go do it. And the course is like, somehow it feels like it's all downhill. There's like two little uphills in it, but I swear, like most of it feels downhill. And it's just nice roads. One thing that they said about it that I didn't know until I was there is rather than being asphalt, most of the roads, almost all of them are concrete. And so concrete is harder than asphalt. So they say that
even faster.
It's faster because of that. Huh. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but it does.
I mean, hard sounds faster,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it does kind of make sense. But yeah, just the days leading into it, the training was easy and we were just getting psyched up. I was just getting mentally prepared for race morning. But it's like you see all the elites are there together and like, you know, Connor Mance, like chill. He's so chill, man. He's like.
Did you hang out with him much before the race?
I mean, just at meals, like we would chat, and he's really easy to talk to. Just like everyone, like they all are, and it was like it was really cool. Just to get the insights. He just loves racing. I was asking about like what races he was doing, and every time he would say, "Yeah, I want to do this race. I want to do this race if Ed lets me." So I guess like that's the way it works. Is he just wants to do everything, and then he has to get the okay from the coach. But the day before, we actually went to see Kip as well. Actually, on the Friday, 2 days before the race, we went and saw Kip in his actual office, which was cool to get to experience that. He's got a good little setup there. He's got, this is crazy. He has Emmanuel Carrere's gold medal in his office.
Wait, what?
What?
He has his gold medal. He gave him his gold medal, apparently.
Tokyo gold medal.
He won
Tokyo Olympics.
Was it the Tokyo one?
Yeah.
It must be then.
He won worlds as well.
But and I think he also won worlds.
It's the Olympic medal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's Tokyo. Yeah.
That's insane.
It's in his office. And then he also has Paul Chelimo's silver Olympic medal, but apparently Paul Chelimo got two of them because I guess if it gets really worn out, you can like apply to get another one.
Wait, that's so funny because have you heard about how much that's happening right now?
No, that's a big thing.
Like hundreds of people have been asking for new Paris medals. I was on like some podcast I was listening to yesterday.
Really?
And it's almost all the bronze medals.
Yeah. Yared's won, like when I saw Yared's medal, it must have been three, maybe 5 days max, and it was destroyed.
Already?
Yeah, he's one that destroyed.
They're like, apparently the, like whatever.
It's like chips off like or something.
Covering they're supposed to put on them, like the French mint or something is like saying, they're like apologizing, saying like they used a different like thing to prevent the oxidation.
Oh.
And it's not actually working. So they're all like, especially, I think maybe it's like only the bronze ones.
Yeah, I think it was mostly the bronze as
well. It's like oxidizing and they're all fucked.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, but so.
So he's got Paul Chelimo's spear.
Well, yeah, he gave him the, and like Paul gave him the new one that he got. So he has the shiny one and Paul has the non-shiny
one. That's hilarious.
I guess. But he also just has like a ton of cool singlets and stuff. So
nice
to see him get a good treatment. And everything was feeling good. The day before the race, we just did a 4 mile jog, and then I just did a few strides, and on those strides I was like feeling amazing. I was like, this is good. I was around Joe the whole time. Joe was, his energy was so funny. I wasn't, because I haven't been around Joe nearly as much as you guys around races, and I wasn't sure if this is like normal for him before a race or this is like, you know, because he was so much more out there than normal. Just I don't know, doing random stuff.
Was he making you laugh?
Yeah, like a Cybertruck drove past us in the run. He just started yelling at it. I was like, what is going on right now? And Morgan Pearson was there as well. And Morgan Pearson brings out the certain side of Joe. So Joe was, he was bringing this funny energy, just doing all this random stuff. I think he did a lot of strides before the race. I just did 4 and I was done. And he was like, where's Joe? He's like all the way down the road striding. But it was good. It was good energy. But then you get to the night before the race and it's like, shit, okay, we got to wake up at 4 a.m. the next day. And I was feeling really good. I was just excited to go race. And we honestly had really high expectations. I think everyone saw that, you know, Joe had, credit to him, he had like put out there very early that he wanted to, I don't know if he always said he wanted to break the American record, but pretty early on, like that was kind of the storyline, and that was so good because that attracted so many other good runners to go there. Like Connor Mance said, the reason if Joe's going for the record, like I need to be in that race, you know? So it was really good, but it did mean that like our expectations were really high. Going into the race, our plans were pretty much go out with the lead pack, try a sit in, and then towards the end, like if you feel good, like you can start pushing it, which like saying that now sounds like so dumb, but you know the results of the race because it didn't play out.
That
like
sounds in theory that sounds like that sounds great good though. Like yeah, that yeah, sounds like the plan, huh? That sounds like the obvious plan.
Isn't it a great plan?
You just do that. Actually, you should just start doing that in every race.
I know. It's like it's flawless, right?
why haven't we thought of that one before?
It's amazing.
Go out with the leaders.
Yeah. So that was my mentality going into it. I was feeling good. I was like, all right, because the thing is, you come from our background. You have to think that if anything is going to feel good, it'd probably be the beginning of the race. Just like it's a very,
yeah,
you know,
in,
like,
in theory,
in
the
theory,
pace should feel slow.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we're used to doing much faster paces in our races. So it's like, all right, so I'll be able to go out with them and then vibe it out. Not how it turned out at all.
Yeah. You would think if it's going to get, all right, like first time, if it's going to get hard, it's going to be late. Yeah. When like the distance catches up to you.
Yeah, exactly. But before we get into the actual race and how it did play out, the morning of,
oh yeah,
it's, I thought it was going to be way worse. It actually was not that bad, I think. Just a lot of caffeine, adrenaline. I woke up super early. I woke up at 2 a.m. and like I checked the time. It was like, oh, like, it's 2 a.m. I'll try sleep. But then I just couldn't sleep anymore. Like, because my alarm was set for 4 a.m. and the buses were starting to load at 4:45 a.m. So, and there was breakfast between 4 and 4:45. So I tried to sleep, but I just lay in bed for like 2 hours. And then right before my alarm went off, I was like, all right, time to get up, get moving, have some caffeine and stuff. And I went down to the breakfast, ate a nice bowl of oatmeal.
Oatmeal and coffee. That's the pre.
Yeah, that was it. And then like I was, it felt fine. It was just like, it was just weird that there was like so many people around so early.
Yeah,
in the morning. 4 a.m. I was like, yeah, it's kind of weird. But honestly, it felt good getting out to the start line. But then it was, so I don't want to like, I'm not ever going to make an excuse out of the weather conditions there, because people like Connor Mance, for example, ran so fast. So it's like, you could definitely go out there and run fast. But I think for us newbies, they added to some of the difficulties of the experience, you know, like the early morning, all the stuff that was new. Well, it was really cold. It was, I think it was about 0 degrees Celsius, 32 Fahrenheit, but the feels like was at 20 because it was also pretty windy. That was the one thing that had, in the few days leading up to it, had kind of dampened some spirits in terms of
record attempts
on the, yeah, because the winds were, I think, like 20, is it 20, does 20 miles an hour sound crazy, or is it 20
Ks? That's pretty, no, 20 miles is windy. 20 Ks even is,
it might have been, I can't remember if that was Ks or miles.
20 Ks is still, it was still, like, it's not still.
On the, it was moderate winds on like the scale. So not ideal for like any record attempts, but yeah, that just added to kind of like the morning when you're just out there and it's like, yeah, blustering winds with some like decent gusts and then just, yeah, freezing cold. So everyone was just huddled in like this little tent area. It was like, it was just such a crazy experience. And then you go warm up and it was just hard to warm up, you know, because it was just so cold. And yeah, I tried doing my strides and I was like, oh no, I feel terrible. I felt so bad doing my strides, but I was still like, that's fine. Like, that's kind of normal. That's kind of what you'd expect. And then it was like, well, a big thing was, what do you wear? Right? Because
that's for a lot of different outfits out there.
So many different outfits. And I had tried on a bunch of different things. I ended up going with, I wore the race shirt tucked into half tights.
Long sleeve.
Short sleeve with arm sleeves under it. Gloves. And I wore the, like, what are they? What's like the ear headband thing?
Yeah, the warm one with the,
not that it's like the black ones, not our super warm one, but the thing, not a beanie, but the thing that covers your ears.
Yeah, like the thick.
Yeah,
I think it's just a headband.
Headband,
yeah. Basically.
Basically. So that was my outfit, and I felt pretty good. Like, I felt very cold on the start line, but I felt good. You were really just cold the first few miles, and then you warmed up really
quickly.
Really good, really quickly. That was fine. But yeah, Joe went for like, I think he wore a long sleeve with the singlet on top. And then everyone was wearing beanies, all this different stuff. I started actually with hand warmers in as well, like the hot the hot ones in my hands, which was, yeah, interesting. But yeah, get to the start line. And I was just like at the front of the start line. And I was like, it was kind of weird because I didn't expect to be right at the front.
Is there any process to that?
No, there's no process.
You can stand wherever the hell you want.
I just like walked there because I was next to Joe. And I thought like, it seemed as if people didn't want to be at the front of the line. You know,
no, they didn't.
Connor was up there as well.
Didn't want the headwind.
Yeah, Connor was up there as well. But I'm looking at all these other really good runners and they were like, it seemed like they wanted to be like back, like in the second or third line. I was like, okay.
How wide are we talking?
Not that wide because it was a shared.
10 people.
It was a shared start line between the men and women.
Oh,
so but the men were on one side, women on the other. And so it was probably 10 or maybe slightly less on the actual start, like at the per line. So
did
it wasn't a mini.
Did you yell out your iconic phrase?
I didn't. Maybe that's why I got messed up.
Slap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. For every major cross country race, Morgan yelled that out. And he this race, every race
was so much more similar to a cross country race.
I was going
to
ask, did it feel a similar vibe?
It was such a more similar vibe to a cross country race, which that was pretty cool.
Wait, if you start a few rows back, do you get gun time or chip time?
Gun time.
Gun time.
Yeah.
Gun time. So why would you want to be four or five rows back?
I don't know. Man, people were like real chill about it. It was kind of weird. Like, because I was legit like surprised about
when did the marathon start? Or was it already?
10 minutes later.
Later?
Yeah. 10 minutes later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just chill guys, you know?
No.
Just a bunch of chill guys.
Yeah, it is much more chill if you compare it to a track meet.
What's Mance doing on the start line? Chilling.
Private. Looking good. Just like doing just his little man things.
Puts and just puts his arm up and goes, it seems like a 59.17. Yeah.
Seems like a great day to absolutely destroy this race.
So everyone's chilling, and then you get the on your marks and the gun, and nobody's chilling anymore. Everyone's sprinting. And that's like legit, like the first mile. It just felt like such a sprint. And
wait, does one of those guys, like, you know, at the start of a track race where the guy's like, hi, I'm the pacer, I'm going to run so fast.
It didn't happen.
Did the everyone pacer knew. Do that?
No. Everyone just knew that we had one pacer, Amon Kemboi, and that he was going 59.30 pace because we had a technical, everyone had to attend a technical meeting the day before.
I think you have to do that for the roads compared to like even track where only the agents.
Even fifth there, you have to do that.
Yeah. Hawaii Mile had to do that.
Oh, yeah, that one's funny. Yeah.
And that one was funny because you sit there and the guy's like, what do you got? Yeah. There's not much to say. You enjoy the beach.
Everyone's here to party.
Everyone's here to have fun. See you guys later.
Okay.
So yeah, everything was, all the rules, all that stuff was known. And, that first, I was just like, it became a straight, like Amon went straight to the front and there was a straight line behind him. Like for the first 800K mile, like everyone was just trying to get him behind him because this was one of the more windy sections, was like the beginning of the race. So that's probably
just
why.
Single file for 21K.
That'd have been so weird to see.
Yeah. And I was just like off the back and I'm like, I'm sprinting like this. I do not feel like I can go any quicker, but I was just losing contact with these leaders that I thought, and it's just where I thought I would have been. But the thing was, I was like around Joe and Morgan, like they were just a bit in front of me at this point. So I did feel like, well, if they're there, then like that's probably a good
spot
for me to be. And the leaders are probably going really quick. It turns out that I think the first mile itself was not crazy fast, but I think the second and third, like into 5K, were pretty quick to get the pace back down.
Yeah, I looked at the splits online and it went like, I can't remember the actual timing, but I think it dropped a few seconds the next 2 miles, like significantly.
Yeah.
Than the first one.
I think 2 and 3 were quick.
Yeah.
So what that meant was like, I was just already off the back end, and then I was like starting to find my rhythm, which I did do pretty well through the second and third mile. But the weird thing as well, which I didn't mention, is that the race starts in the darkness. Like it's not daytime yet. It's still dark at 6:45 there. So it's a really weird experience of it becoming light like during the race. And my eyes were just like, I just like blurry the entire time. It was like a very, very weird experience. But yeah, you get into the rhythm. We're running I was probably running like at that point, I guess. I went through 5K in 14:13. And I was running some of my quickest sections of the race was like the second and third. Like I was running pretty quick there, so I was probably running for 4:35 pace.
Mm-hmm.
But it was feeling really good. Like it felt really nice just being out the roads running. But still,
what did Mance run five? What did he split at 5K?
14 flat or 14:03. So they already had 10 seconds at that point, and this is what I think was the biggest mistake that I made in the race is not having a sense of urgency or alarm bells like, I need to be with those leaders. Because there was the really front pack, which was Mance and four or five others, and then there was a bigger second pack, and then we're off the back of that second pack. And I felt like I was kind of more focused. Like I was running alongside Joe, and I was like, okay, so this is probably good. And I was more focused on being like finding my rhythm. But yeah, if I could go back, I would be like alarm bell. It's like you have to be part of a pack, like one of these packs up there. Like that's your race right there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess I kind of thought like I'll be able to work my way up to them, but it did not end up playing out like that. And I went through 5K with Joe, and then I was feeling pretty good, so I picked it up a bit. And the pack in front of me was three people. It was Morgan Pearson, Clayton Young, and an Ethiopian guy. And so across those next few K, like I caught up to that pack and then I kind of led it and was kind of pushing. And we were probably running similar paces to the pack in front of us at certain points, but then they were still like pulling away a little bit. And honestly, like once I started pushing at the front of that pack, Clayton Young just dropped right back. So then it was just three of us. And that was kind of the story of the race for me, was just being a part of that pack, because I spent about 10K with these two other guys. And that's, I think, part of the reason why it started getting really hard, is because we were kind of trading off the leads and we just like couldn't, it was hard to, once it started getting windy, which was later in the race, like 8 miles or so, because we went through 10K pretty decent as well. I think I went through 28:30, which is slower than I wanted to go through, but it was still a nice consistent pace that first 10K. And if I could kept that pace going, I would have run really, really quick. So that was awesome through there. But yeah, we started to slow down a lot once we started getting into these more exposed sections, and it was really hard to just run like in a nice rhythm when there's just three of us and you had to think about like kind of going to the front and pushing and then like sitting in and all these things. And so to fast forward a little bit, we slowed down quite a bit from like at around 8 mile when it was super windy, and to the point where the pack behind us ended up catching us. And they had gone out way slower than us, because they had gone out slower than 61 minute half marathon pace. So we probably had at some points in the race, like, I don't know exactly, but like 30 second lead on them, like probably a really big gap at some point. But they had just, this was a group of guys, it included like Reed Fisher, for example. I think it was a group of guys who were, they had a much more conservative race plan than we had. And I think that was kind of, for them, it was really smart, you know, because they were rolling at that point. Like when they caught us, it was in the last part of the race and they had a lot of momentum to just keep it moving forwards. It was nice for us to get swallowed up and caught, because it meant that we sped up a lot and we actually had other people to run with finally. But at that point in the race, you know, we'd already just lost so much time and just spent a lot of energy in the way that we had run it. So it was nice to then be able to compete with these guys. I got beaten by a bunch of them in the last few K of the race, because I think they were just stronger at the end. That was it. Like I was, the last part of the race, like was down this, like just you get back into the city and then you have about a K to go. And it's just like an all-out K. Like, you know, you can run pretty fast there. But these guys just were a lot stronger there. And we end up bringing it home. I came 13th, just dipped under 61, which was pretty good. But, like, definitely afterwards, for, like, Joe and I, we were, like, really disappointed, just because our expectations had been so lofty, like, you know, so high. And we just hadn't, neither of us had raced close to how we thought we were going to. And yeah, as you can tell from the story, the race plan was completely out the window from the beginning. And I think, yeah, if I could go back, I would also probably not set expectations in that way and try to, I don't know, because like now that I've had more time to reflect on it, I'm like, wow, that was a good performance.
I mean, yeah. I was about to say, debut and you're running under 61 minutes for a half. It's funny how high our expectations are when we're critical about something like that. Because looking at that for me, like that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
performance. It's just when you're training and you're with the people that you are with, you're always gonna have that kind of push of like going for records, going for crazy times. But yeah, that's still crazy to me.
I feel like there's no reason not to have those expectations. I don't think there's anything wrong with the expectations. I think as long as you can like reframe it like you're doing now,
yeah,
and like and still take like a bunch of positives out of it. Mm-hmm. If you like had those expectations and then you came out of it and was like
still like mad
and you still were like, oh, all right, yeah, everything we did up to it must have been like, oh, it was fucked, like the preparation was terrible, like we must have done everything wrong, like that kind of like attitude, then yeah, maybe the expectation, then that's maybe like a dangerous road to go down. But mm-hmm, I feel like you can have high expectations, not meet them, and still have like a positive experience, still get a bunch out of it.
Yeah.
And still know that, well, I don't know, does 59:30 feel far away?
Not really, because like, far away? Because I can see how
You see how it can be done?
I can see how you can drop a minute with like small little things can make that much of a difference. You know?
See, then I think like you can just keep, fuck it, you just have those same expectations.
The best thing you can do is be self-aware to be able to analyze a race and see like, okay, this is my first one. What did I do really good and what did I do really bad? Like you do it with every race, right? Yeah. So
I feel good now. The only part that I didn't like about the expectations was how my race plan was really tied to them, I guess, if that makes sense. Because I would have liked to, be able to have
a plan B, maybe
a plan B,
or like
that's
a plan.
Essentially what I'm saying.
When you mentioned, but like, I don't know, being with the group, like being with a pack, like I'm surprised that that wasn't mentioned to you. Saying like the way raid racing goes is, you if you're with a big pack, you work together.
Yeah,
and
but
it's
maybe
actually very
maybe
useful.
That's like maybe that's what you know now. It's like, all right, three people isn't really enough.
I'm
to
I'm
like
just saying Dathan being a roadrunner, I'm surprised he would say like, I've done these before, this is what really benefits you when you're racing the roads. I'm surprised that wasn't said.
Like eight guys,
yeah,
being with sounds like way a group easier.
First or second pack, it just yeah it
but
does
that's
sound.
I mean this right here is just experience, you know, as yeah. well. So I think these things specifically, and like the whole early morning thing, I think so much of that, like once you do it a few times and you have the experiences of it, it becomes a lot better. I was like, I think now it's like, I feel really good about things. And
faster than Jingy ran, isn't it? What did you? What
64.
Yeah. Dude, crushed him.
Also faster than Josh.
You went through 10K a little faster.
Don't worry about that.
You went through 10K.
But, crushed Jingy.
I mean, would you go back to Houston again and do it? Directly?
Yeah, definitely. I've really liked this whole last 2 months, 3 months. And I like
the training's been pretty epic.
The only thing is, I can understand why you wouldn't want to race a half marathon if you had other races that were more of a focus, because of how like destroyed my body is now, you know, like and how much downtime you have to take after it. So that would be the only thing. But I just really liked it and how it made our training so strength focused.
Yeah.
And I'd like to race, like I was looking up like racing Valencia half, like at the end of the season.
Yeah.
I would love to go to Valencia.
Is that October-ish?
Yeah. It's still, it'd be hard to do. It'd be hard. I mean, I think it's about 4 weeks afterwards. So it isn't
depends
enough
on,
time.
Depending on how you feel afterwards.
But that's the thing. Like you have to, like there's, it's not like you can really plan on that, because who knows how you're going to feel afterwards.
You could be on top of the world, or you could have won the world championship. You'd be like, I'm not fucking doing that. I just want more champs. I'm freaking out, bro. Yeah. But no, that's pretty sick. I mean, the training, like watching it, from my perspective, seeing you and Joe crush training, it's actually been pretty awesome. Been pretty encouraging to see it, because it's hard, man. It's hard, but it's not...
It's a different type of hard.
And it's been,
I think it's a lot easier than crushing track sessions.
Yeah, it's been... Yeah. It's very much like... It's just consistently hard. Like,
it's a little bit of a mindset change to training, too. Like
I loved watching it. I thought you guys... Honestly, I'm proud of you both, but I think... I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm sure you guys, and it's not an obvious take to say at all, but the next half marathon you guys do, I wouldn't be surprised how much better you'll feel, as well as how the performance would go. I think just it's such a learning curve still. It's like two different sports almost.
Yeah, I think your body adapts a lot, and just a lot of experience. Because I was thinking about like cross-country racing, and I was like, if you had to line up in a 8K or 10K cross-country race against a bunch of people who had run a ton of cross-country races before, and this was your first one ever, like, it's always going to...
Yeah.
It's like, for that to go well, like it does go well for some people, but it's like, yeah, it's a lot. And so I was thinking it more like that. Like, I remember getting my butt kicked in, like, especially early, like, college cross-country races. Yeah. And it's just like... You just walk out of them sometimes like, wow, that was a crazy experience. and then you learn from it and you move on. But
I had a few of those.
Yeah.
Jordy had a few of those.
But it was, it was sweet. And I really liked the feeling of running like fast on the open roads is really nice.
Nice feeling.
For that. It's like the race does feel really long between the 8 to 11, 12
Did it
miles.
Feel like a long run at all?
I always worry. Really.
Because you know, like
probably,
the duration.
Probably wished it, dude.
The duration of a run, you know, when you're like, I'm just trying to think of an hour. What an hour.
That's like an 8 mile run. That's like an 8 to 9 mile run.
Yeah.
A 9 mile run. Yeah. On a normal day. So it's not really. Yeah, it's pretty chill. An hour is not that long, really. But I guess it's
unless
long
you're trying running. As hard as you can.
You're very zapped after it in weird, in
did
different
you,
ways.
Did you take any carbs? No gels during it?
No gels during it. I don't think you possibly could when you're running that
too fast.
So my plan was to take a gel maybe 10 or 15 minutes before the race, but then I actually felt really full already. Mm. So I didn't take it because I had also taken a caffeine gel, I think, when I got off the bus maybe. So that was maybe 90 minutes before the race. So
those guys literally split 61 though in marathons.
I don't know how they do it. They have to, yeah.
They must be smashing carbs the whole way.
Well, they do it. They don't take gels normally. They take bottles.
Bottles.
And then
but running with a bottle at 4:30s, that's got to be...
It's going to be so hard.
Also probably like a skill you practice.
Yeah. And also they don't... I kind of realize like they don't try to like drink that much necessarily. Like they'll take... They'll have like a small amount in their bottle that they'll drink. And that's it. So it is kind of more doable. I had bottles out there on the course there just in case I needed it. But I didn't. I wouldn't have even like been able to get a bottle. Like I couldn't even fathom like finding my bottle on a table running 4:30. Like I couldn't even fathom doing it. So I didn't even try because the reason I had put them out there though was there's some research that like Kurt and Koki were telling me. I don't know if this is like widely known or if this is like a secret that we shouldn't tell people. But so apparently they did studies and if like when you're doing sports or whatever, if you're taking a like carb drink or like a sugary drink, you don't have to, they did a test and they showed that if you just like,
just
in your mouth right, and you spit it out, your body reacts as if you drunk it and you get some of the benefits from it. Which is kind of crazy.
You
don't have to actually drink it to get some of the benefits from it. You can just, your body having the sugar in your mouth, like still reacts to it.
They do the same with soda.
those sodas you get.
I get the addiction dopamine to the brain, but I also don't get the ingestion.
So you don't actually drink. You get one this big and you spit it out.
It's like smoking cigarettes.
Exactly.
You know, when you smoke cigarettes, you just exhale it. It doesn't.
Genius. Fucking genius.
Amazing. But should give a big shout out to the leaders of the race because they were on a different level that day. They did so amazing. Gobena from Ethiopia getting the win. Conor Mance ended up coming second, somewhat controversial.
Yeah, it looked like it was an interesting finish. It was very tight. I mean, it's hard to measure it, I guess, very from tight the angle.
Do they have a photo?
Yeah, they have the video.
Oh, they do.
But the camera's like facing them. It's not on the side. It looked like
it wasn't controversial that Conor came second. It was controversial that he maybe got impeded.
Yeah, it did look like the guy went in front of him.
People were saying that he cut him off a bit, and I think there was a pretty big prize purse specifically for breaking the course record. I think it was. So I think it was about a $20,000 like swing.
Sheesh.
Like it was a lot of money right there. But
it's all right, he broke the American record.
Yeah, he broke the American record and he absolutely crushed it, in fact, and it was just so amazing, like looking at his sweats and stuff. It's like pretty much 4:30 pace, I think. Just 13 miles.
Just perfect 4:30 pace.
Like pretty close to that. Yeah. I think he went through 10 miles exactly on like 4:30 pace. He broke the 15K, 10 mile, 20K like American records as well.
God damn.
Something like that, you know. So he was just on one, absolutely amazing, and he made it such a good race. I think for everyone that was watching, I think it was pretty exciting. So good for him.
Yeah.
On the women's side, Wayne also broke the American record. So that's why you can't complain about conditions, because these people went out and
broke her American records.
Her own American record, right, from last year, I think.
Yeah. Also good came second to Getachew from Ethiopia. So, yeah, and Morgan Pearson was just the funniest thing. You guys should actually watch it. I'll send it to you. There is a video like on YouTube that you can find of the finish line footage.
How pissed is he that he didn't press
it? It's a super long video, but you can just skip to the part where we finish. And he was just 3 seconds behind me. But I didn't really know this, but I guess one of his big goals was to break 61.
I think that was like in Valencia. He ran 61 really O's as well, really with 10s.
I think he's done it maybe... had done it twice before.
And he was like,
I
have to go to Houston and get it done.
And there's a video of him crossing the line and he just yells, fuck, like super loud. Super loud. But yeah, he was just a couple places back and then Joe ended up a few places back from him. So we all came in around that 61 minute mark, which, yeah.
Maybe it makes sense. All trained together.
It was solid. But the thing is, like, our training, if you look at our training on paper, it was like, you could run faster than 61 if you do that training.
The training was pretty insane. I mean, the 3 mile session that Morgan missed on that Joe did with Morgan Pearson was insane.
Yeah,
and then the session you guys, I don't know if you did this multiple times, Morgs. You can correct me if I'm wrong, which I probably am. But you did like a mile hard and then you did like a mile at 5 minute pace.
We did that a lot. You did that a lot. That one actually wasn't like, we had a couple of fast miles in that session, but that wasn't.
What was the one that was kind of crazy that was on the track? It was like, not crazy, but it was hard. It was on the track. It was like a hard, maybe it wasn't on the track.
No, my hardest session was the 10K that I did with you.
Oh.
That was the hardest one I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That was really solid. No, I've already said this to George, but I was super happy with the way we trained. I think like,
yeah, the training was sick to watch.
I don't think
actually.
it was a limit. Like, I think we were so fit. We were so ready to go, I thought. So
yeah.
I think
that 10 by K, cool.
That was a really hard session.
Did I tell you I jumped in on that session? Dathan's like, oh, you gotta do the session with the boys. I'm like, oh fuck. And I'm like still kind of getting my legs under me with the strength side of things. Like when I'm on the track, I feel pretty good. But when doing any fartleks or longer threshold tempo stuff, I'm like fucking useless. And I went with Morgan and I was with Morgan Pearson and Joe. And I'm like looking around going, I'm not training for a half marathon. I'm about to get fucking rocked. I lasted 6Ks and then I did 800s. And these boys looked amazing.
Six sounds pretty good.
No, I was really happy with it.
It was a great session.
But they looked amazing. But like Dathan, the funniest thing about the story is that Dathan told us, oh, it's a pretty flat loop. And it's literally just an uphill loop. And Morgan's looking at everyone like, what the fuck? It's not flat at all. Yeah. It's just an uphill off the rep.
It was, well, one rep, we did them like out of
backs. Yeah, we did them out of backs.
So one was uphill, one was downhill. It's like, but they had been hyping up that loop as being the fastest loop in Boulder for like forever.
Yeah, but it's just like literally uphill.
It's still fast. It's still really fast. But yeah, it just wasn't flat. It wasn't
we expected. Yeah.
But I mean, those guys, the thing is, Joe and Morgan Pearson are both known for being able to train really,
really, really hard. Yeah.
Hard and solid as well. They have a bit of a reputation for that. So
yeah, they do indeed.
Part of it as well.
How did manager Tom Wang run?
So yeah, Tom did great. I think his goal was to break like 130 and he came in at 129.
Nice.
So actually, he absolutely crushed it. He said he felt really good. He said he was just chilling. So I think he can. He has a lot more in the tank.
Nice.
So that was good. Kyle Merber, 226 in the full. I didn't see him out there, but got to give a shout out to him.
Shout out to Merber.
What pace is that?
226. No clue.
No clue either.
Let's see. What's that for a half? 73s. No, I couldn't tell you.
Don't look at me. I'm not good at math. But good to hear Membrane someone crushing it. Do you reckon he was wearing like a Grand Slam track, like kind of advertising bib or something?
Probably.
To get, you know, this is racing, you know?
Yeah, probably just to let them all know.
You let them all know about the Grand Slam. Rapping.
So yeah, that was it. And then we came back that evening, which was cool, just to be able to come back on the same day as you race, come back home. And since then, my body's been very sore. I haven't been sleeping very well. And
you were out of it when I saw you when you got back.
But now it's time to get back to work. Slowly. So
nice. Well, you had a workout today.
Yeah, we had a light workout four days later today. We did 35 minutes of fartlek.
Mm.
Felt pretty bad. I thought like
move the blood around a little bit.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, but I was like going into it, I really thought like, yeah, doing this workout, I'm gonna feel really good after it. I felt terrible after. Hopefully tomorrow the goodness comes.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
So yeah, that was fun. But yeah, we'll just slowly get back into it. I think I don't know if this is true. Apparently this is a thing that Mr. Tin Man used to say, but it's like, I don't know, there's some truth to it. He would say that for how many, like for every mile that you race is like another day of recovery essentially. So
until
you can like work out hard again.
Only a day of recovery usually.
You only a day and then you can go hard again.
Oh,
I got 2 weeks.
This is a bit of a side note, but shout out to Ollie Hall, breaks the curve record from the Neuromuscular Day.
You broke the curve record?
I broke the curve record.
Like the miles per hour?
Yeah.
What'd you hit?
17.7.
17.7?
Yeah.
Apparently, I thought Mario had the record.
Mario had the record at 17.6 from what I've been told. Wow. I thought it was 17.8, but
I thought Robert just jogged on there at like 18 or something.
No, so Robert was taking it chill, but previously he like has jogged at like 16.8. Like jogged. Like he could break it for sure. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to shout out to Mario. Thank you.
Did you get like super lactate? Lactate, sorry?
I was out of breath.
That thing makes me get really
lucky. Yeah, the funniest thing is watching Yared run it because he strides so long. When he like so hits long. It, he hits it so hard.
But
he
I think...
He hits the wood, the curve so hard.
I think you can kind of cheese it on there. Like, I think that, well, you still have to run really fast.
Dathan thinks he runs slower.
But you have to... Well, I don't know what that converts to for like, what's that for 100 meters?
51 seconds. So no. 400.
18. Oh, yeah, no, that is right. 18 is 25. Yeah. So 18 would be 50, so 17 something.
So that does line up.
But yeah, that does.
Dathan thinks like the first start of it when you pick up, it's good. But then once you're running at that speed, it's like apparently you'd run quicker.
Oh, on the flat, probably, you could run on the flat. You could run 12 point a lot easier than you could run.
Because you have to put the force into like the front of it. I think that's how you get it really high.
That's so how I've been
like,
doing it.
You just like really focus on pushing into the front. But you're kind of like... Is it overstriding? I don't know.
I think you can overstride it. You can overstride
I've never tried different. To sprint on it.
The thing is, the way Sage hits the ground, she's really good in the curve because she hits it at a point where she can really put power on that curve. And Yared the same when he hits it. So
yeah.
But yeah, I just want to take that from Mario. So
well done.
I didn't even know
Mario had it, but congratulations.
Well, Carlos had it before. So, and then Mario took it, and then I took it, and then I'm sure Robert will take it by accident.
We're going to put a board up.
Yeah, Robert will take it by accident.
Make it official.
He's so quick.
That'd be sweet.
All right, well, that's my shout out.
Well, we do have a bunch of random news, but I think maybe we'll push some of it to next week.
I think we should.
Yeah.
Got to save something.
Got to save some of this juicy Josh Kerr signing until
30-24.
Yeah, 100. Yeah. That's so long, actually.
100 years from last year.
How much do you think he's getting paid a year?
A dollar a year. So he's getting $100.
That's not bad. Long.
I think at least $1.
At least one.
At least $1. Yeah.
That's so funny that they signed it.
To 2034?
Okay, hear me out. I know I just said we're not going to talk about this, but this is all I want to say about it. I think we can talk about it more specifically next week. But do you guys think it's kind of funny that like Brooks has to go in all in on Josh Kerr?
Yeah,
they have to. Yep. He's
multiple Olympic medalist, consistent.
He's amazing.
He's a world champ.
Yeah,
very consistent.
But is it not funny that don't you think he kind of is not like he doesn't align with their like brand image like at all?
No. Run happy.
Yeah,
you know who does?
He actually doesn't align with them at all from a branding standpoint.
You know who does? Marco Arop.
He does.
He aligns with the Brooks mentality, whereas Josh seems to me like a Nike guy. He seems like a Nike guy.
Yo, I'm so happy that you brought Marco.
He definitely doesn't
up.
Run happy.
Because everyone should go watch his YouTube channel because he posts YouTube videos and like I think no one really sees them because I think they're kind of just like a bit hidden on the internet. But he's just like such a chill, happy guy.
So nice.
He's the freaking best.
Nice guy.
So I was just watching one before I came over here, which he just posted. It's so funny the way they train. Like he's at Mississippi State still, and he has I can't remember his name. The really good Jamaican guy training with him that was recently in the NCAA. It's a really good 800 guy.
Mm-hmm.
But they still train with the college team and he's doing a long run and it's just such a different world to us. They do a long run but they all have like headphones and he has like Beats on just running with the team. And then
does the whole team have
like,
headphones on?
Like half of them are like wearing headphones and he's just down the dirt roads and he has them like pulled up at first and then at one point he just pulls them down and just takes off and just drops everyone. It's just like can you imagine like us pulling up with like
We should do that one time.
It's not just like AirPods. It's like actual headphones. And
just wear the Air Maxes to practice and then just not take them off.
Yeah.
That's like, kind of a baller move.
I was like, for a long run, like,
yeah.
It's so sick.
But Josh doesn't seem like a Brooks guy. He seems like a Nike guy, to be honest.
Yeah.
He always has been kind of that mentality-wise.
You're right, though. Brooks has no choice.
But they don't have a choice.
Well, isn't Des Linden still with Brooks? Like probably. She's been with Brooks for years.
She probably is some ambassador. I'm not sure, but she I feel like she does really align with it.
She
super does.
Yeah,
I mean,
but I think when you've done something crazy like what she won Boston and then was it Boston? She won Boston, right?
Boston,
not Chicago.
Yeah.
She won Boston and then Josh is a world champion. Like Brooks doesn't have not dissing Brooks, but they don't have as many athletes as like brands like Nike or Adidas that win stuff like that. So you want to keep those.
And
athletes.
He does get them so much attention.
He really does. Yeah.
So yeah. That's that. We can talk about that more next time, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think that's it from us, huh?
That'll make sure everyone comes back next week.
Yeah, we're not losing them.
We'll be running it back next week.
Well, it's been good to be back with all the boys in the studio. That's been episode 170 of the Coffee Club Podcast. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening or watching. And we look forward to seeing you all again next week. Bye-bye.